Hey, what's going on again, Quality Timers? Welcome back to another edition of Quality Time. This episode, we are going over the Christmas classic filled with Yuletide cheer and a high level of the ultraviolence. It's none other than Die Hard, guys. Yeah, we're going over Die Hard. But if you take this opportunity, if you love the podcast and you really enjoy yourself, or if you're a new listener, drop us a rating. We'd like to see a good 5-star rating on there. We can read it on the show sometime. And yeah, we got some that are built up. So hop on the bandwagon that everybody is a part of already, pal. Okay? And that's about it. Guys, stay tuned. Get strapped in. Fucking roll up a big old jizzoint and enjoy this Christmas classic, Die Hard.
You're listening to Quality Time.
Sergeant Paul shot a kid years ago.
And it was Urkel.
And you turned out it was Urkel.
Because, I don't know, but when I saw Sergeant Powell, I was hoping, where's Urkel going to show up? Because
he's in him. Yeah, because family matters, you know?
This is the first time I've seen this movie.
This is the first. It's pretty exciting.
Get the fuck out of here.
That was the surprise.
He's old
How
as
old
us.
Are you?
I'm 39 years old.
Oh, my gosh.
It's one of those things. Because who told me yesterday, Tommy... that he'd never seen The Godfather, he'd never seen Goodfellas. So I think this is
Tommy had never
that
seen
bad.
Alien either until like right. a year ago.
We
but
lived in
you
a
know
box.
What? Listen, that's all in the past now. Okay. You're a real man now, finally.
Yep,
I know you went through marriage. you've helped bear a child and bring that into the world. But now you're a real man now that you've seen Die Hard. But hey, let's start it off. Welcome to Quality Time, everybody. Yay, we're here. All right. Ooh. Jeremy's usually excited at this point. He doesn't help out at all. My name is Eric Woodworth. Thank you very much for joining us again. All you Quality Timers out there, it's a joy and it's a pleasure for you to bring us into your little ear holes every week. And sitting to my left is none other than my brother, Mr. Jeremy P. Woodworth. Jeremy,
I know not who of you talk of.
It's okay. Who am I speaking to tonight?
It is I, Mr. Rickman.
So that's your Alan Rickman?
Yes,
that's
Alan Rickman.
This is all week of prep. You come with that Alan Rickman impersonation?
Yes, I worked on it for seconds.
Okay. We can tell. You really put the time in. And right across from me, joining us for the very first time at Woodworth Studio One, is none other than Die Laughing Production Zone. Very funny. The very talented. Mr. Sean Gabbard.
Hey.
Sean, how are you, buddy?
Oh, man. I'm so good after seeing Die Hard for the first time.
I know. How does it feel finally popping that sweet cherry?
I think I came in at the right podcast. I had to cancel a couple times, and this was the right one to come into.
Yeah, I mean...
Feels good.
I'm happy, yeah, because you were supposed to be. I forget which one we were going to have you on. It was a couple episodes ago.
It was a movie I didn't want to watch.
Oh, it was Maximum Overdrive, and we had Al Barnes instead of you.
Oh,
so you were replaced by a very high profile comedian, Al Barnes, who luckily came in and filled in. Thank you very much, Al.
You did a great job.
Yeah, man. Sean, it's exciting for you to be here for the first time at my humble abode. Last night, we went out for Justin Schlegel's...
wrestling...
what is it?
Return to the ring. No, he returned before, but he was basically doing his thing as a wrestling manager.
Yeah.
I can't explain to people where I go when I go to these wrestling matches, except for saying, have you ever seen The Wrestler? Yes.
Yeah.
When he's in those small venues, and it's depressing but also amazing.
It's very similar to doing open mic comedy.
Yeah.
Is the level of pro wrestling that he's on right now.
I think it's more fun than going to a regular big time wrestling match.
No,
I've never been to one, but it was awesome. I don't know.
It was really fun. I mean, I had a blast. We're talking about MCW, and a couple of weeks ago, because by the time this comes out, it'll be about like 2 weeks prior to here. We went to Seasons Beatings, which is a Maryland Championship Wrestling
That's
event.
That's right.
And Justin Schlegel brings out King McBride. He is King McBride's manager at MCW.
Yep.
And I think the most fun part about seeing Justin out there is that, I mean, Justin is kind of a big local name around, especially around the Baltimore area. He's on 98 Rock. Yep. He has a lot of people who know who he is. He's not even on, like, the flyer that advertises this event. He's like, he doesn't even...
He's like, I was driving here listening to retrospectives of George H.W. Bush and how he was like, you know... He just never wanted to draw attention to himself, and that's Justin when it comes to wrestling. He doesn't even want to be named, doesn't want to be out there. He just wants to be a part of something greater than himself.
Yeah, and I think he did a really good job last night. He came out in a fake wig.
Yeah, oh yeah, the fake wig. It got torn off at one point.
Fanny pack.
Put it back. And my favorite moments with Justin is when a kid is arguing with him and he gets right in their face.
Oh yeah, he fucks with the kids in the front row.
Yep.
So just to describe this place, like this wrestling event was at a Dundalk flea market. Hartford County, Joppa, Maryland a flea market.
Permanent flea market. Not like, you know, we just said I thought
not like a shitty one
set up shop.
Not a shitty one out in any parking lot.
I don't know
anything.
What's shittier. This is if it's permanent or if they set up shop.
Oh, the stalls are there 24/7.
Oh, so it's interior one, and they have like the whole back part of this flea market where they put on wrestling shows, and there's probably what I would say 150 people there, maybe 200,
maybe more, maybe two,
maybe
even 300.
I don't think it was three. I would say 175, 200 max.
Have you hung around long enough to do these things with Justin Jones?
No.
Justin Jones used to actually do, he was a referee for MCW for a couple of years.
Well, Jeremy, when we were there last night, we haven't told you the big reveal.
Uh-oh.
Mean Gene Okerlund was there.
Yeah,
what?
Mean Gene.
And he was, I went to the bathroom and poor guy, he's in a wheelchair now.
Yeah.
But he got up to give a speech like Roosevelt, like he got up. And like he didn't want anyone to know he was in the wheelchair. He was like, I started here in Baltimore, Maryland, and blah. And so I'm seeing him in the wheelchair because you have to go through the permanent flea market to go to the bathroom. And he's in the wheelchair and he's noticing that his wrestling appearance is in this flea market. He's like, a flea market? I'll take a fishing rod, thank you. And like his handlers are laughing at his bad jokes. I didn't know what to say. So I was just like, hello, sir. And that was it. Mean Gene.
Hell yeah,
this
man.
This guy's like a big wrestler.
So Mean Gene Okerlund is one of the most... watch wrestling. I watch.
I am actually...
He hates wrestling.
Are you
serious?
Yes.
Jeremy hates pro wrestling.
Yes.
But I love it. And right. Mean Gene Okerlund is actually a famous... not a ring announcer, but he was like the back... He was the... backstage interviewer guy.
Right.
I don't know what that's called.
But I have a feeling he must have been a wrestler at some point, like way before our time.
Perhaps.
Right?
You know, I never knew that he ever actually wrestled. But he was always the guy, back here with the Macho Man, Randy Savage. Randy, how are you feeling about your match with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat tonight?
He was the main guy.
And if they'd be like, you know what, you need to shut up, Mean Gene. He's like, well, I don't think that's very professional, Macho. Like that.
But this was just, like, he was like the Ryan Seacrest of like WWE.
Yeah,
WWE.
Yeah, very much.
Every
very
single
fuckable.
Interview. Right, right. With that horseshoe bald head.
And honestly, there was a time from 1980 to about 2010 where Mean Gene didn't age at all. He was just looked the exact same weird old bald man with a mustache. And he still kind of looks the same, except like I expected him to look much older when I got there.
Yeah.
But he's just like, he's got... First of all, in just a regular stage appearance, he's covered in makeup. He actually looks not real. He looks like an animatronic. Like, I feel like at any moment, he could have just, like, started to freak out and go, Macho Man must kill. Sorry, Mean Gene's got to go take a break. We're going to go wheel him off into the back real quick.
I like how I got the backstories now. Were you there the first time we went?
No, I wasn't there the first time.
Right, because now they have, like, you know, I know who the cartel, quote-unquote, is. And
yeah.
All these characters. I'm like, I don't like those guys, and I know why.
Yeah.
So you just got to go. If you go a couple times, you're in. It's like a soap opera.
Well, we got in some of the inside information about the, apparently the cartel went way over their promo time, and that prevented Justin from getting suplexed during his after the match.
Yeah, he was
with
upset
McBride.
About that. He didn't want to.
But you know what Justin did get is he helped, he interfered on behalf of King McBride so that he could pick up the victory.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he's left alone in the ring, and he caught a massive chop to the chest, like bare chested like this,
yeah.
And it was pretty good chop. And then we kind of all started cheering. The guy was going to leave, and we all started cheering, one more time.
Oh, yeah.
One more time. And we got the whole audience to do one more time. And just when he got him up, he goes, we started a chant that he goes, you deserve it.
Oh, yeah.
You deserve. And the second one, he really fucking hauled off and just slap chested him right across the fucking thing.
Oh, yeah.
Jeremy, let me show you this picture real quick of Justin's chest that got texted to us earlier. Let us see.
Is there a red hand mark on it?
Oh, there's a little bit more than just a single red hand mark. There's a couple. Feast your eyes on this bad boy right.
Please tell me this isn't in an airplane bathroom.
It's okay. Well, maybe I shouldn't show you then.
Maybe it is.
Maybe it is.
Oh, can I tell? What about this?
Feast your eyes on that.
All right, go ahead because I want to tell a story.
No,
about
go
that
ahead.
Kid.
Start that story
about that kid that. Oh, there it is. Yep. It looks okay. So the cartel.
I don't know what am I supposed
up.
To see.
Everybody,
look at the red handprints across his chest.
Oh yeah, there is. Got slapped pretty hard. Nice.
So the cartel is like the worst of the worst. Everyone, they're the villains, and they're getting off stage, out of the ring, and this one kid. At a moment of silence. This one kid. If you remember, he goes, hope you get lung cancer.
Jeremy, I'm clicking at you. Give me my phone. Yeah, he screams out, I hope you get lung
yeah,
cancer.
So
by the way, he crushes.
Like yeah,
he crushed
everyone's
for the next
like,
5 minutes.
Ooh.
We thought we had good things, and then that kid completely stole all of our thunder.
Yeah, you don't know what you're going to get at the MCW. It's a good time.
But it was fun. It was very local. I mean, you know, it's fun to watch the craft and the art that goes into putting on a play fight show, which is fun. I mean, I'd love to do it sometime.
Yeah, you should. You would be,
dude. I would
we
be.
Gotta think of your name.
I already have everything already planned out, Sean.
Right,
Sean, I 100% have had this planned out for years. What I would do.
I'm thinking.
I'm just.
What would be your wrestling name?
My name would be the Big Sleaze.
All right, because I was
Big
thinking
Sleaze.
Gorgeous Bobby Fabulous.
No, I like that. Gorgeous Bobby is nice, but I would be a large man who is also a. God's gift to women, but I only like fat chicks. And like, if like a hot chick is in the audience,
so you would be like,
if there's like a girl that's like good looking, I'm like, look at you, you pig. And then I pull somebody else out of the audience who's like a real fat girl. I'm like, this is what a real woman looks like.
So
and
you
then,
would be like the fat chick version of Ravishing Rick Rude.
Yes, exactly. Okay. But I would call the pretty women pigs.
All right.
And just like call them disgusting.
Do we have to explain who Ravishing Rick Rude is, or you?
No, I feel like our base knows enough that, you know, we're only excluding Jeremy, and that's fine.
He needs no explanation, too. I mean, you shouldn't explain Ravishing Rude.
I met Rowdy Piper.
Yeah, he did.
Nice.
And he cut a promo for me, which was really nice.
He was an exciting character.
My special move as the Big Sleaze would be... The sleaze ball, which is a top rope maneuver where I like cannonball on you, kind of similar to like the fat guy from The Hook. You remember the movie Hook?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I would do like a rolling kind of flip cannonball onto your body.
This isn't a pipe dream. Like you could do this.
This is 100%. Yes,
like
this is what
week,
I would do. Well, the thing is,
it's
Sean,
once a month.
The problem is I've sacrificed too much of my body to the sport of rugby over the years that I just don't think. It would be fun. I would go out and maybe get like a match or two, but
you
the realistic idea of me doing these things over and over again.
Yeah, you actually get hurt.
Just wouldn't. But it's a young man's game, Sean. And to get into it this late, it would just be.
You think
it just wouldn't be worth it.
Because
yeah.
some people at the MCW are like 50s.
There are some rough There's looking some... dude. Who's what are they called? The Rock and Bowl Express, and they were a bowling.
Yeah, I was just going to mention
bowling
the Rock
unit?
And Bowl Express. And every time they make a move, they're like,
spare. Yeah,
7-10 split.
Yeah, they want to grab the guy's legs, and then they split him apart. And they're like 7-10 split.
And one of the guys of the three just has Docker pants on for no reason. It's got I don't know why. Nothing
just because
to do with bowling. Yeah.
I also like at the end of that match, they were wrestling the members from the Cartel, and they cut the one guy, the fat guy from the bowling team's hair. And so after like they had intermission where they turn all the lights on, they're like, we'll start the show back up in 15 minutes. The bowling guy who got his hair cut was holding the back of his hair like, this is the thing that really hurts, is that they cut my ponytail off. For some reason, I thought that was so funny.
It's his strength.
That was a good sell. It was a good sell.
Mm-hmm.
Any other interesting stories, Jeremy, from this week? How's the job been going, big pal?
Do we really want to talk about this?
I don't know. Should I save it for? I'll save it for brain damage. How about that?
Yeah, well, I think we'll save that for another show.
This is a touchy subject, and maybe we'll get it. I'll get into it a bit later. And then we did karaoke last night,
we
Sean.
Did karaoke.
Wasn't that fun?
It was pretty fun. You guys rocked it. I just tried to keep up. I don't know what happened when I left. Maybe everyone got involved.
There wasn't much more that happened.
Okay.
Lou sang 8 more songs.
Star of the show.
Yeah, Tommy Cimbazzo's significant other got at
Baldwin's
Seafood.
And it was basically us and one drunk.
Yeah, and like the manager's best friends.
Yep.
And then they watched us do karaoke for like 2 hours or something like that.
Yeah, pretty much.
It was pretty fun, though. We had a good time. The Amish Pair of Guys got together again. That's Tommy and I's super group, Weird Al cover band we have.
Yeah, you guys sung about 6 Weird Al songs,
yeah,
I remember.
Yeah, there was that a... the guy also was singing Weird Al songs. Like, the DJ, he decided to start singing Weird Al. And Tommy was just like, hey, you hearing this? Like looking at me through the window because I was having a quick vape outside. And I looked at him and was like, what the fuck is going on? How dare he step on our gig? So I had fun. And it was good. Lou saved it because there was a time, I think, where we were done. Lou did like 5 songs in a row.
Yep, that is exactly what I want for my 50th birthday, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Dreams.
I want tacos. I want local wrestling. I want karaoke at a seafood restaurant.
We did it all, man. Yep. We did it all.
For Joe Robinson, 50.
R.I.P. Joe Robinson.
Oh, he's already?
That's just what I assumed. Okay. That he's 50. He's good as dead now. Yeah. But that's cool, man. Yeah, and it was just, it was fun overall. Speaking of Joe Robinson, I do have a couple of Joe Robinson corrections.
Hey, Joe Robinson. Do you have any corrections for us this week on Quality Time?
Okay, Joe Robinson's corrections. Sean, just to keep you familiar with the show, Joe Robinson texts me every episode and corrects all the things that we get wrong.
Okay, I figured it would be something like that.
It's a very Joe job, right? Yeah. Like, this is as Joe as it gets.
Okay. On one of the episodes, we actually tried to get a pack of matches and burn the show down. But Joe corrected us.
He corrected us.
So he texts you in real time?
Yes, he listens to it. He texts us, yes, and then...
This is broadcast live?
No, it's not. Okay. This is him at the gym.
It's like, yes, no.
In his real time, he's listening to it.
As he's listening. So it could be at any time.
Yes, yes. So, he goes, here. All right, here's my first correction so far. You act like more than 5 people know who Al Barnes is, who was our guest 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
He Yeah, we made Al Barnes sound like he was important. But you know what? As a person who brings somebody up, maybe we're trying to elevate him to the next level, Joe, to our tens of listeners.
He's no Chris Restivo.
Yeah, that is true.
It's just what Joe wouldn't have done. That's all he's trying to say. That's all he's saying. He's like, nah, it's got Al Barnes. No one knows who he is.
Yeah, no, yes, this fucking guy is. You're pretending that he knows it. I'm supposed to listen to his sage advice that he's sharing about a fucking movie that was made before he was born. Real great guest, Eric.
And I hate to say that me as a person, I'm completely dwarfed by Tom Myers as a comedian. So
that is true. That is true. So he also goes on when I guess we were talking about the Breakfast Club early on. He goes, "No, Claire is the virgin, Al. You fucking dick." He goes, "The goth chick is Ally Sheedy," which we didn't name Ally Sheedy. But Jeremy, in your defense, you say you know a lot about Ally Sheedy.
No, I did see her at Chiller. I just didn't talk to her or meet her.
And last was Al's take on post-apocalypto. He said, "Fuck him and his take on post-apocalypto."
Man. Man.
And lastly, Joe Robinson said, I mentioned that there was no corrections on last week's episode because of the way we filmed them. They're actually on the episode that was after that. He was like, "Fuck you. I had corrections for this episode." So I stand corrected by that. There was supposed to be corrections on that one. Instead, we did it on the following episode, Joe. So that's Joe Robinson's corrections
right.
for...
not that much.
Yeah.
I expected a lot more, actually.
There's been times where it's been pages.
Yeah. Oh,
it's
yeah.
been pages and pages
oh, yeah.
of just us being dressed down. And I love it, personally. I really do.
Shows he cares, that he really likes the show.
Exactly.
He says it's his favorite podcast, so I don't think he's lying.
Yeah, it is true. He does listen to every episode.
I even did the song about how Joe Robinson hates me. So.
But he doesn't. But he said that was a correction. He loves you, Jeremy. You're actually one of his favorite people.
He's going to hate this podcast, this episode, the most, probably. Because I'm on it.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Like,
I mean,
he brings nothing to the show.
Can I ask Sean Savoy one question?
Okay. And my answer would be, it'd be different if you were smoking weed, though.
Sean, just go, okay.
Okay. Ask away.
So
I'm going to be sitting here in the middle.
Did we ever work together at one of the murder mysteries?
Yeah. Well, I didn't know we were working together, but we did, because the guy on my right suddenly had a donkey mask on, and that was you.
Okay, so that was my show, the one where I almost actually performed.
Oh, the one where you bombarded the stage, like, and just got on stage with us.
Man,
our
fans are getting more and more wild. Mm-hmm. And it turns out it was Jeremy. It was Sing for Your Life, I think.
Okay. He was a plant.
And uh-huh. even though I did pretty bad at singing Thriller, I think the black guy did worse.
Eddie Lyles at the DC Improv?
Thriller. I wasn't there for that one.
Yeah,
it's because you never have. He just is saying that he has better thriller singing skills than Eddie.
Okay.
He messed up too, but I messed up too, and at least I sang lyrics that were kind of fitting to the song. So
you made up better lyrics than he fucked up. Is that what you're saying?
Well,
I like that you're really pushing hard for this. Two wrongs will make a right.
When you tell comics just show up and just do the show, they're gonna do just that. They're not. It's really hard to tell them to rehearse or practice. It's just not in their wheelhouse. I think that's what happens most of the time.
I work very hard on my parts,
Eric,
okay?
Works very hard.
I am a method actor.
That's why you've been there since the beginning.
Yeah.
I remember, I mean, you put on an accent for the doctor way early on.
Way early.
Who is this fucking guy?
You know what? When they said there was a waiter in there, the first thing I asked myself, where's this waiter been in his life? Where's he at? You know, what kind of things has he experienced? Where, maybe he has a mom with cancer. That's why he had to take this job. It's not easy. He's a little bit stressed out. You know what I do when I'm stressed out? I take off my pants. That's where the magic comes in. I learned that actually from Ron Howard's directing school. It's only $80. It's really worth it, guys.
Oh, masterclass.
Masterclass.
Take your pants off.
I learned that actually from Kevin Spacey's masterclass, which I think is funny.
Do you remember that he had that?
Oh,
can you do a podcast on that? Dude. Can that be the movie, the quote-unquote movie that you fucking watched?
I don't know if you can still get it, because do you remember they had ads for it
for like three or four weeks,
and then the sexual allegations mm-hmm. came out, and they were just gone.
There's got to be somebody who downloaded it.
I want to watch his master acting class really bad now. That'd be a good episode.
Like little moments where he touches for a little bit too
long. Yeah. He was just like, it's really important here to look him in the eye when you say this. You want to fuck my ass, baby? You want to do that?
Don't be afraid of the content.
Hey, let me ask you a question. You want to fuck my ass?
Why would I molest you? You're a woman.
That's a good bit. I like that. Yeah. So, hey, Quality Timers, weigh in.
Yeah, please find that.
Hop up on our Facebook page. Let us know. Send us some love. Do you want us to buy the masterclass for Kevin Spacey, get a hold of it, and do a review on this podcast?
Somebody's got to get a hold of it. You know, I think I would know who would have it.
Yeah, we could find somebody. Somebody's gotten this, right?
Yeah, some like young actors and shit.
You know, I'm pretty sure I handed out 200 of those flyers and nobody did a single dick pic.
You know, I haven't really brought up the failure of our dick pic drawing thing, but that's okay. It's another failed marketing attempt.
I mean,
that we tried.
50 of them is my fault for not trying to sell the dick pic thing, but I sold the dick pic for at least 150 of those flyers.
Yeah, and it just didn't work out, man. You know,
I gotta be honest. Now I'm a little bit tense now that I know Joe Robinson is listening so intently.
Yeah.
You know, he's just very judgy.
Oh, he's already picked apart everything you've said so far. There's no going back. You
like,
just kind of deal
nothing,
with it.
I know. Yeah. Like, it's changing the whole makeup of this podcast.
You listen.
It's got to get darker. It's got to get...
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to play to his sensibilities, but you just feel like it's got to get nastier.
Yeah, listen, he's one viewer from...
No, it's... But he's
the seven or eight that we have, and we don't need to cater to just him, okay?
I know, you're right. It's just... All right.
The important part is that, you know, do what's in your heart, and okay. Remember in the back of your mind, Sean, you're going to outlive him by, like, five or six years.
Yeah.
So
right.
Those will be the happiest years of your life with Katie. So
yeah, I know.
You know, there's so many good songs about following your heart and about how your heart will like tell you and everything. But as the Bible says, the heart is wicked and deceitful above all things.
Thank you for that, Jeremy.
Damn, Jeremy.
I didn't know I was going to get that when I walked in tonight, but again, you've surprised me. You've surprised me again, McLean.
Because you know what my heart always tells me?
Segue.
To kill, kill, kill.
Well.
Follow your heart. Don't look.
Which is the wrong thing to tell a psychopath every time.
So,
yeah, it's true.
I guess to kick tonight off, we're going over the 1988... Kevin McTiernan classic. Die Hard. And Jeremy and I are both, obviously, we're musical gurus, Sean. So we have both come up with a special song.
We compete in music to see whose musical dick is bigger.
Yeah, now we want our Quality Timers
to... Eric's musical dick has girth.
Yeah, but his has length.
Yep.
Length and chops. Mm-hmm. And an experience that I can't match.
Right.
It's the classic matchup.
Goes deep.
So we both made some Die Hard songs here.
Okay.
They're not very long. Give them a listen.
All right.
You know it's Christmas everywhere you look. Yuletide carols, cheers in every nook. And still I walk through people forgetting about our Lord. Jesus died for our sins, and now you'll feel the sword. Because it's Christmas, and the Germans are here to steal all our Christmas bonuses, so stick it in their ear.
Yeah.
Yes, it's Christmas, we all proudly say. Jesus would have wanted me to blow your ass away. I can't believe they would hit us on this night. Germans think they got us, but you know they ain't right. Was just a party, cheering filled with glee. Now John McClane's gonna turn your corpse into a Christmas tree. Because it's Christmas, Jesus Christ is born. Throwing Nazis off the roof and sounding all the horns. Yes, it's Christmas, we sing in regard. Stick it up your German ass, it's time. to Die Hard.
Oh, man. That was...
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfuckers.
So bad.
So that was our Christmas Die Hard song. Jeremy, you went a different route, though.
Let me go to Die Hard Road.
It maybe sounds a little bit like John Denver's classic Country Road, West Virginia.
I'm gonna strangle Nazis with a chain.
West Virginia. It's maybe a little West Virginia.
It's got nothing.
I maybe
West
only...
West Virginia have to do with Die Hard in Los Angeles.
I maybe changed one chord to the song. Okay, whatever. Here was what Jeremy did. A little bit more of an original tune than what I went with. Here we go.
Oh, yeah. They died hard. They really died really hard. What about that guy? Oh, you mean that guy that died hard? Yeah, he died hard, yeah. What about that guy? He got shot in the knees 1,000 times. He died hard. Oh, yeah. They all died hard. What about those guys? They had a missile launcher, but then they really died hard. From a chair filled with explosives from at least 10 floors down. They died hard. Terrorists or not, they died hard. What about the head of the Nakatomi Towers? He was shot. He was shot in the face. Yeah, he died hard. He died hard. Oh, yeah. Almost everybody in the movie died hard. What about that guy? He got strangled by chains.
Alan Rickman died of cancer.
All right.
All right. So,
it's a great way to end.
So, Sean, solve the sibling rivalry. Cast your first vote between the Woodworth brothers, my Christmas rendition of it, or Jeremy's more hard rock Die Hard song.
Oh, man. I got to go with Jeremy's because of the way it ended.
Damn it.
Just because of the way it ended.
It was a strong finish to that.
It was a horrible ending.
It was a really strong finish to that. God damn it. Good work,
it's
Jeremy.
It's close. I'm sorry.
If only I had a real drumbeat ending for it.
Listen, I liked it better how it trailed off like that.
Yes.
Yeah, it was actually... That was good, Jeremy. All right, you win this round. But we'll see what the tomato meter says.
I think you can
online.
Actually perform your Christmas song live.
I could. I really could.
I think you should.
It might be part of it. We'll have to see. December 13th, if it makes the show.
Yes.
I think it'll make Jesus
happy. Actually, December
15th. Where are you guys December 15th?
December 15th, I'm filming my set at the Auto Bar.
Okay. I thought this was a murder mystery show.
No, but we have multiple murder mysteries. We have one in the 8th at Winchester.
Yeah, I'm not on any of them.
Which is already after this has been recorded. This is airing, so
it was
useless.
Great.
It was, the one on the 8th was so good. So you have multiple chances to catch the murder mystery. It's the Mary Murder Mystery this month. And we are on the 20th at the DC Improv, the 22nd at Magoobie's Joke House.
Okay.
So that's a Sunday and a Thursday for everybody out there. Make your plans. Buy some tickets. The DC Improv one will sell out. So if there are tickets when you're listening to it, you should check right now. Because if you wanted to go, they might be sold out.
Wow. I'm glad I clued you into do some promo.
Yeah, we cut it in there, brother.
Nice.
We get it in. It makes me sad, though, because you're not in the Mary Murder Mystery. But
I can't remember why, but it was something about filming the beginning, spoiler alert, and there's a beginning film.
Yeah, there's a beginning film as part of this, but also
and
we wrote this
it.
One when you had moved to L.A.,
I remember you, because remember I did the detective once when Justin had his son?
You did do this once.
So it was something way before. I don't know
what
it was.
What did you do to Joe that got
I don't know
out of this one.
I don't
That's
know, but he could rewrite it any time. He could refilm it any time. It's just like, nah.
Oh well, yeah. It was nice knowing you, Sean.
Sometimes I play the HR person who was listing all this stuff. But yeah, I got
to come
out
to the DC Improv one.
I got
to
come,
because
we're doing a Secret Santa. So I'm going to ask if you guys can do it at the DC Improv, because I don't want to go to Magoobie's if I'm in DC.
Well, let's fucking do that.
Let's do that.
Hell yeah.
All right, I'm glad we figured that out.
Fuck yeah, dude.
All
okay.
Right.
So anyway, the movie opens up. Let's just hop right into it.
Yeah.
And it's old our hero John McClane, played by none other than Bruce Willis. Bruce Willis was actually during the filming of this was during the day actually filming episodes of Moonlighting,
then
during the night he would walk over to the come over to the 20th Century Fox Studios to shoot Die Hard in the evening. And oddly enough, the giant building that you see, which is the Nakatomi Plaza that we will talk about later in this episode, that's actually the real 20th Century Fox building that got built for this movie.
I've been there.
How is it? Is it everything you thought it would be? Or
I never went there.
Oh, okay.
I did live in L.A. for a little while, but they blew up the building, man.
Sons of bitches. And all the explosions that you do see in this movie around that building were real explosions that they put really close to the building. So
it looks
it's pretty real. It's pretty awesome. So as he's flying, he gets some sage advice from a gentleman he's sitting next to. He tells him he needs to, you know, how you get used to it is when you get off, take off your shoes and scrunch your toes into the carpet. That's how you get used to flying on a plane.
Oh, right.
And I have
that was weird.
He looks really gross too. Like he has like the mouth of he has the same kind of teeth as the guy who actually killed Andy Dufresne's wife in the Shawshank Redemption. It, like it's a real golden yellow that he has to his teeth.
I just wish the beginning of the film would start off with the plane not exactly landing, but everybody's killed on the plane except for him.
Yeah.
But nobody notices that he's the only one that survives.
Ah, because he's unbreakable.
Yes.
I dig it. So I have a little bit of audio from his exchange with this gentleman on the plane. He's taking down his stuff, and he looks, and he sees that John McClane has a gun. We have to remember, this is before 9/11. You could just carry guns on a plane.
Right.
Of course.
If you're a cop.
Fist with your toes.
I know. It sounds crazy. Trust me. I've been doing it for 9 years. Yes, sir. Better than a shower and a hot cup of coffee.
Good. It's okay, I'm a cop. Trust me. I've been doing this for 11 years.
Got him with that one.
Trust me.
That piece of shit.
Well, what has he been doing for 11 years? Just being on planes with guns?
Yeah, I've been concealed carrying for my whole life.
Some walk by night, some fly by day.
What are you kidding?
Moonlighting strangers. One has a gun and he's a cop.
I remember Moonlighting was a good show. I saw that as a kid.
I don't think I've ever actually watched Moonlighting ever.
It's a good show.
Jeremy, do you have fond memories of Moonlighting?
Every show.
Funny.
Every episode?
Every episode.
Was it good?
Even until the end when it got slow.
What was Moonlighting about?
That was about Bruce Willis is a nutty funster with this crazy broad who's all stuck up, but he still does her.
Yeah, and they're moonlighting. Yeah. Like, they have two jobs. They're doing, you know, their day job thing, and then their real passion, which I can't remember what either one of them are doing.
And the people who
child trafficking.
Right.
Yes.
And who kept the fun nuttiness on the show? Curtis Armstrong. That's right.
Booger?
Booger, yes.
Nice!
Hells yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And I know that secretary.
Yeah.
Elise Beasley. She was funny as shit.
Hell yeah.
She's very funny. She was in Bored to Death that lasted like a few seasons.
Okay.
All right, well.
I'll take it.
Whatever.
So next we get to meet our Chatty Cathy driver. He's picked up by a African-American gentleman named Argyle, which probably the only black guy ever named Argyle in the history because it was written by a white guy.
Argyle was way over the top.
Yeah, he gets a little too personal.
He's so urban.
Hey, man!
I have a little bit of audio of Argyle chatting with our hero, John McClane.
Or is he married?
He's married.
Okay. Oh, sorry about that. It's a girl's day off. I didn't know you were gonna sit up front. So, your lady live out here?
About the past 6 months.
Meaning you still live in New York?
You always ask too many questions, Argyle.
Yeah.
Sorry, man. I used to drive a cab, and people would expect a little chit-chat.
No, they wouldn't.
Yeah, first of all,
who the fuck expects chit chat in a cab?
This is before like Uber ratings. I mean, Argyle's Uber rating right now is a 1 star with his fucking obtrusive questions about about my wife,
and not just not just a little chit chat. Like, so did you cheat on your wife?
Hey, you be fucking other pussy or what?
What was it like to fuck her once you got married? Worse, better, or the same? Like, what the fuck, Argyle? I'm just trying to go to this Christmas party and see my ex-wife and bounce.
So,
sorry, pal.
John tells her that she took this job out here and that he's a cop and he just couldn't leave. He's got cases to close back in New York, and he goes, "I'm a New York City cop. I just couldn't leave.
I just couldn't do it." Yeah, not that you couldn't get transferred to the LAPD.
So. Not only this, he drives him to Nakatomi.
Exactly. He could have been Beverly Hills cop.
Yeah, he could have been.
Yep.
So Argyle drives him to Nakatomi Plaza, and as they get up there, this motherfucker gives him the caveat that he's going to wait for him to see if how his surprise visit with his wife is going to go.
I tell you what, I'm going to pull in the parking garage and I'll wait. You score, you give me a call on the car phone. I'll take your bags to the desk. You strike out, I'll get you a hotel.
You're all right, Argyle.
Just remember that when you sign for the tip.
Yeah. Oh, that's the whole angle.
There you go.
I forgot that line. So if you score with your ex-wife, what does that even entail?
I don't know.
Like, you don't fight or you agree on child support. There's not really scoring at that point.
Hey, let me know if you're allowed.
It's called backsliding if you fuck your ex-wife.
Well, they're not technically exes in this.
Right.
They're still married.
She just changed her
name.
But
she changed her... Oh, yeah, spoiler.
She did change to her maiden name, which we will find out soon. John actually walks into the front, and we get to see early touchscreen technology.
Ooh,
as he walks up to the front desk. Yeah. And he's like, I'm looking for Holly McLean. And he's like, help, knock yourself out. So he starts touching the screen, and he can't find her name.
And by the way, who's that voiceover actor who's a security guard? Yes, can I help you?
Yes.
Please touch the screen.
Mr. Herman. Mr. Herman. Actually, in Hollywood, we have to have day jobs because I actually do the voiceover for Batman, if you've ever seen Batman the Animated Series. So he sees that her name is Gennaro, which is funny because it just sounds like generic. Like Shane Black, the writer of this, the script writer for this, just like Holly something generic. Gennaro. That'll work. Yeah, fuck that bitch.
She's Italian, so she's spicy when it comes to getting in arguments.
There's gonna be a lot of accidents at this this tower.
Yes.
I think like Sakatomi would be a good name. No, let's call it Nakatomi.
Nakatomi, baby.
Nakatomi. This is back when also like you had to watch out for the Japanese because they're taking over with all the corporate takeovers. And
We can't forget about those crazy Japanese people. Yeah. Okay, we haven't forgotten about Pearl Harbor. And by the way, Die Hard doesn't let you forget about Pearl Harbor because there's multiple references to it throughout the film.
Yeah.
He actually walks upstairs, and the first thing he does is talk to Holly's boss, who he doesn't recognize, but seems to recognize him. I have a little bit of that audio here.
I talk to him right now.
Party's jumping.
Yeah. Looking for...
Father Gennaro. Yeah. Then you must be John McClane. Joe Takagi.
Hi.
How was the ride in?
Nice. I have you to thank for that?
Seemed the least we could do.
Quite a place you have here.
It will be if we ever get it finished. There's still several floors under construction. Holly went to the vault room to fax some documents. She should be back any minute.
So they walk
into
Holly's
office. Is right back here.
And then we get to meet Ellis, who's snorting cocaine.
Ellis, and how was your plane ride over? How was your ride over? The limo driver was a real chatty Cathy.
He was.
This is the nurse.
I want you to meet John McClain. Holly's husband. Holly's policeman.
Oh.
Ellis is in charge of international development.
Ellis
heard a heck of a lot about you. Missed something.
Ooh, talking about the cocaine.
Throw quite a party. I didn't realize they celebrated Christmas in Japan.
They were flexible.
I love it. I didn't realize they celebrated Christmas in Japan.
And then his comeback to that clearly racially charged
statement. He's like, oh, you want to go there?
You want to fire
Let's
that?
Play.
Well, this is how I fire back. Get a load of this.
Pearl Harbor didn't work out, so we got you with tape decks.
Actually, it's sort of a double celebration. We closed a pretty big deal today, and a lot of it was due to Holly. Am I right, JoJo?
Hey!
Holly.
So he basically brings up Pearl Harbor. We couldn't get you at Pearl Harbor, so we got you with tape decks. Oh, yeah. I mean, guilty. They make
true
electronics back in the 80s and 90s, right?
Yeah. Sony's last forever.
They really do. They're great products, except for that shitty piece of shit soundbar I have upstairs, which is broken.
So if Die Hard would now, it would probably be the Chinese, mm-hmm. a Chinese person's building, and then the bad guys would be Russian.
yeah. We've really let the Germans off the hook pretty much for the whole, oops, sorry about the Holocaust.
Whoopsie-daisy.
Just kidding. But that, not in the 90s, we were still not cool with Nazis and Germans in general. I mean, they'd just taken down the Berlin Wall in, 86, right? Mm-hmm. Is that when it fell?
In 89, so this
so
still
this is
was
still, the
West
Berlin
Germany.
Wall is still up.
Yeah,
so.
The bad guys were like, it was a West German, some West German organization.
Eric Honecker, I happen to know that about my Cold War history. He was the West Berlin mayor, and he was a real dick.
What? Of course.
He's like those guys in all those West 80s German movies mayors. That are trying to shut down the summer camp. You know what I mean? It's just like, oh, not over here in West Berlin. Soon East will be ours as well.
And we'll have all the summer camps that we have could ever desire.
The next year after this, David Hasselhoff becomes the biggest star in Germany of all time. So,
yeah. Also in the scene, we establish how much of a dick that Ellis is. Ellis has to point out the Rolex watch that Holly has earned this year.
Yeah.
Basically, just shitting on John. He's just like, "Go ahead, baby, show her the Rolex that you earned." And she's like, "It's nothing." She's clearly embarrassed by Ellis's actions. But
I like to think that this guy is probably the douchiest of douchey guys in movies, next to the douchey guy in Dawn of the Dead remake.
Yeah, he is a pretty big dick. The guy you're talking about, the guy who's in the basement that. in the remake. Is that who you're talking about?
Yeah, the only douchey guy
Cooper.
There is.
Oh, the Dawn of the Dead remake with they were in the shopping mall.
Yeah.
Who is he's very similar.
He's
to
from
that
Modern
guy.
Modern Family. Yeah. Now. Yeah. Good stuff. I like him, actually.
Well, he's cool in Modern Family, so.
Yeah, I had a hard time liking Modern Family, knowing what a dick he was in Dawn of the Dead.
He really played a good dick.
I was like, that guy can't be a good dad. He left those people to fucking rot. He's a real cock in that movie.
Real piece of shit.
So the next scene, John goes to wash up in a nearby sink. He has a brief chat with his wife Holly, and the sparks are still there. They're starting to kind of ignite, and John just goes and picks a fight with her about going out here and leaving him there, and he's not letting the wounds heal.
No.
But it's broken up because Holly has to go make a big announcement for the party and leaves John shoeless and no real shirt except for a wife beater, kind of having his face washed up at this party, which is just all the things he's doing is very odd right now.
Yeah,
like,
wait, why is he shoeless again? I totally missed that
what
part.
A piece because he just, goes to go change. Wash up. He's like getting changed or whatever
to look better for the party.
He's taking a fucking real shitbag Irish shower in office building sink, like it's real. He's a real piece of shit.
How long was his flight
to his shoes?
I mean, New York to LA,
4 or 5 hours.
Yeah,
four and a half,
something like that.
Yeah, well, you have to take a shower after that. I mean, come on.
Nah, let's not get carried away.
But what happened to his shoes?
I guess he takes them off. And then he just
goes out without shoes.
They don't show his feet at the beginning. Maybe he was like, oh, this is a Japanese building. I must respect their customs.
Yeah, I forgot, because that's the whole movie. It's just like, he doesn't have shoes while he's fighting off all the Germans.
Yeah. Well, I think this is why. It's because he's changing now. This is what establishes why he has no shoes on.
Okay.
So,
and something happens.
And then, at about the 17 minute mark, shit starts to pop off. The Germans start to roll up.
Yeah, I should have just waited. That's why. No shoes.
And they walk in the front door.
So Kareem rebounds, right?
feeds Worthy on the break, over to AC, to Magic, then back to Worthy, right? Boom! 2 points.
So that was... There was our computer specialist, Theo, and Carl. Yep. They walk in the front door, blow the security guard with the timber of gold's head off, and they just start moving quickly. There's a box truck that comes in. About 12 Germans in all start coming out. Even an Asian German is with them, which I always find
Oh, the Asian German. Yeah, no explanation on that guy.
No, they're all German.
No line for him.
Except for that guy who's clearly Asian. But they're all they're like 6 foot tall. That Asian guy is pretty famous. He's in Big Trouble in Little China and a bunch of other movies, too.
Don't forget Genghis Khan in Bill and Ted's Excellent Journey.
So he's a very big name. He's been in a lot of... He's one of those... Oh, I remember that guy from that movie.
Don't forget one of the guy with both swords fighting Batman in the original Batman.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
Most of the German muscle had long flowing hair and cashmere sweaters.
Yes, very strong cashmere game. Mm-hmm. Actually, like, as they walk in with their long hair and stuff, they almost look like the hit band Europe. As, like, yeah. They just walk around.
I believe we can get through this safe if we do the six seals that we get through.
Is that a Cosby?
No.
Thank you for that, Jeremy.
Well, this is probably LeVar Burton's greatest role, so
yeah. So the Germans move fast, they move quick, they completely lock down the building, override the computer system, lock all the doors. They even place their own men in security uniforms at the front desk so as not to spook anyone.
Smart Germans.
Let's not forget the evil version of Huey Lewis. As one of the guards.
He does kind
of
look like Huey Lewis.
He's ready to be hip to be square.
It's hip to be square. Gonna rob these Nakatomi Japs and we're gonna get them.
It's the power of love.
Fellas, you're just way too loud.
They end up... cutting the phone lines to the place downstairs with a chainsaw, which is pretty, I thought, aggressive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, they got to make sure it's done right.
Yeah. Well, there's Carl and then his twin. It looks like his brother, who's, I guess, not Carl. He's trying to, like, actually wire it so it's right. And then Carl just comes in with a chainsaw because he just has a chainsaw and just slices them all off, which is, it's just a wild scene. He's like, taken care of now. almost nobody in this movie is of these Germans are actually German at all.
Really?
Yeah, most of them are Russians, and they were most of them are picked just for their height alone. They wanted everybody to be like over 6 foot tall.
And they look real Aryan. All of them look super Aryan.
Well, oddly enough, the most German person in this movie is probably Bruce Willis because he's actually born in Germany. His mom is German and his dad is American. And he was born on a U.S. base in Germany.
That's why he has to fight. He's used to it. Have to fight Germans every day growing up.
So he had to resent having to kill his own people throughout this entire film, which is pretty fun. Yeah. But after they take control of the building, they go up to the 30th floor, and Alan Rickman goes and introduces himself as Hans Gruber to the group.
Ladies and gentlemen, due to the Nakatomi Corporation's legacy of greed around the globe, they are about to be taught a lesson in the real use of power. You will be witnesses. Now, where is Mr. Takagi? Joseph Yoshinobu Takagi. Born Kyoto, 1937. Family emigrated to San Pedro, California, 1939.
Pretty funny, because as he's walking around doing this...
Interned Manzanar, 1942-43.
He keeps looking at all the other Asians in the room.
Scholarship student, University of California, 1955.
He looks at Ellis for a minute, and Ellis is like, not me, man. Not me.
Law degree, Stanford, 1962.
MBA,
Harvard.
Knows
a lot about his education.
1970.
What are you, my transcript? Easy,
President,
pal.
Nakatomi Trading. Vice Chairman,
Nakatomi
Investment
Glee Club. 1960.
Finger-banged four cheerleaders at 13.
1959 to 1961.
How do you do?
How do you do?
It's a pleasure to meet you.
And they whisk him away as they have information they need to get from Mr. Takagi. So,
Takagi!
Alan Rickman, I mean, it's a pretty powerful scene. He really does command a room. This is actually Alan Rickman's very first major motion picture. He'd only been on British TV up until that point. And this is his Hollywood debut at the age of 41.
I'm going to say that Alan Rickman is probably a better actor than Daniel Day-Lewis.
Ooh,
right?
Shit.
I don't know why.
Oh, Joe Robinson alert.
Throw down.
Joe Robinson alert.
Throw down.
You've triggered
just
Joe
it.
Robinson.
Just leave it out there. Just
Holy
leave it out there.
Holy shit. What have you done?
Rickman's good. He's a good actor.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I ever see Daniel Day-Lewis in a Harry Potter film?
Never.
Played a Hans Gruber type villain.
Mm-mm.
Never always looks like he maybe has a slight case of irritable bowel syndrome.
IBS
I don't know
constantly.
Does he have that face to you?
I don't,
it's just like, hello.
It must have been the cheese curds I had earlier
I'm
today.
Taking over this building after about 5 to 7 minutes on the toilet.
It really grinds my gears how this is going.
I hate to say my second favorite Gruber, because my first favorite Gruber is Dr. Gruber from Reanimator.
Okay.
Dr. Gruber.
Thank you. Thank you for that. So they take him into the other room. John, who has not been spotted by the rest of them, actually hides during this part and escapes into a stairwell. And he's kind of just running frantically around the building, just trying to stay out of sight while this is all going down. Shoeless, might
Shoeless.
I add. Armed with his, looks like a Beretta, I'm pretty sure. 9mm Beretta. Very popular gun at the time. And they take Mr. Takagi into his office, where we hear this. Very Christmassy.
When Alexander saw the breadth of his domain, he wept, for there were no more worlds to conquer. The exactness, the attention to every conceivable detail. It's beautiful. This is what this is all about. Our project in Indonesia, contrary to what you people may think.
What do you mean, you
to develop
people?
That region, not exploit it. I believe you. I read the article in Forbes. I could talk about industrialization and men's fashions all day, but I'm afraid work must intrude, and my associate Theo has some questions for you. Sort of fill-in-the-blanks questions, actually.
So they access the computer as he's looking at it with this high-tech 80s computer.
That code? You broke in here to access our computer? Huh. Any information you could get when they wake up in Tokyo in the morning, they'll change it. You won't be able to blackmail our executive, threaten our profit.
Sit down.
So as this is all going on, John is kind of scooting his way across the floor and peeking into the office.
Mr. Takagi, I'm really not interested in your computer.
I'm interested in that pussy. That sweet Asian man
key.
Pussy.
Because I am interested in the $640 million in negotiable bearer bonds that you have locked in your vault.
And by bearer bonds, I
and
mean
the computer
bonds.
Controls the vault. Money.
What is a bearer bond?
What kind of terrorists are you?
I also think it's funny that he was just like, terrorists don't like money. Like, he lives in this world where terrorists wouldn't want to make a dime. Like, we're fighting just to be poor for the rest of our lives.
This is how 80s it is. We have to break in to get the bearer bond certificates. And if you get the certificates, you've stolen all the money. No. Just like, it's a fucking piece of paper. Stop payment on it and you're fine.
Yeah, yes, it's not impossible to make those not payable, right?
I think, yeah, it seems like it would be possible.
So he gives Takaki an ultimatum. Give him the codes at the count of three.
Safe guards are now vault, and the code key is only one of them. You'll never get it open.
Then there's no reason not to tell it. It's a very nice suit, Mr. Takagi. To be ashamed to ruin it.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to count to three. There will not be a four.
What?
Give me the code. One. Two.
I don't know it. I'm telling you. Get on the jet to Tokyo and ask the chairman. I'm telling you, you're just going to have to kill me.
Okay. We do it the hard way. Tony, see if you can dispose of that. Carl, you better go and check on Heinrich's work up on the machine floor.
It spooks John McClane. He makes some noise, and the Germans run out to go find where he is and who was making that commotion out there.
Can we talk about
find
the,
him.
Talk about the other great star of this film?
Yes, please, Jeremy.
It's the stare. The stare plastic gun that might have been a 223 or could have been a 9mm back in the day.
Oh, yeah?
It's an Austrian gun. It's orange. Oh, I'm sorry, it's gray.
Oh, yeah.
Very, very recognizable.
And he had a silencer on it that he takes off of it, which is pretty cool, too.
I think it was probably still pretty new back then. I don't know. It had only been around for a couple years.
I mean, I would agree. It is a beautiful gun, Jeremy.
It's a beautiful gun.
Yeah, what are the guns that the other Germans carry that have, like, the machine gun rifles that they're holding?
Those might have been MP5s.
Well, the MP5s are, like, the banana
or
clip ones.
HKs?
Maybe
HKs?
It's an HK.
Yeah.
Yeah, those things are fucking badass. Yeah. I like those. Those are pretty fucking cool.
I forgot what delineation of HK they were, though.
Okay.
Unless an HK is an MP5.
Maybe we'll figure that out by the next episode. I don't know. We could probably figure that out.
Know your full autos that you can never afford in your lifetime. So.
That is true. Sean, we've set the stage in what is clearly going to have to be a two-parter episode, we're already reaching the hour point on this one. Where are we at in Die Hard right now? How do you like it as the stage was set, since this was the first time for you seeing this?
I think it's, I saw it, you know, as a 39-year-old, it's one of the worst pieces of shit I've ever seen. If I saw it as a kid, it would be on the level of Goonies, probably.
Okay, I could buy that.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, imagine seeing it now, fresh, and you.
I'm going back in time, unless yeah.
It's like the action version of a softcore porn, just without the, you know, all the actually like the sex scenes and everything leading up to it is so fucking bad. It's just so bad. And
I agree with that, yeah.
I mean, you know, it's bad enough to be good, so, you know, just enjoying it.
I personally, so I'm overwhelmed by nostalgia by this, because it's to this just ranks up there, hitting me with the feels, with watching a Predator or Aliens
also
or any of those
seen,
ones.
Also never seen Predator. I've seen Aliens. Predator, I could do another.
Okay.
Podcast on
Predator. We've already done that one. I'm sorry. That was a Joe Robinson special app.
My podcast. I didn't mention you at all. I'm thinking of a podcast called Ghost Stories, where you talk about being ghosted and like it's in spooky music.
No, I'm game with that. That sounds awesome. Actually,
we've got 4 episodes, but then you know, you're good.
Well, Sean, it's right now. It's December 10th when this drops. What do you got going on this week? What do you got? You got any shows you need to plug? You got anything you want to throw out there? Like, hey, I'm Sean Gabbert. Where can people find you?
Just find me on DieLaughingProductions.com. I haven't been doing too much stand up lately, but I'll plug this back in as I get shows. I mean, I'm
You're a very funny gentleman,
thanks,
Sean.
Man.
I mean, it's good stuff.
I appreciate it.
I enjoy the shell out of. I love the soap pussy joke.
The soap pussy, yes.
Soapy. Yeah.
That's what I write it down as. Soapy pussy.
Soapy pussy. I love that bit.
It's a
good
thinker. It's really a thinker.
So check out Sean on Die Laughing Productions. You can see him in the murder mystery, not in this one, but maybe he'll show up to the DC Improv one. Who knows?
Yeah, I might show up and just mess with you guys.
Okay, cool.
Maybe I'll be Mrs. Claus when you do Santa Claus part.
Does that have anything to do with American Psycho, where he asks her to clean her vagina?
Yes.
What, Soapy Pussy?
Yeah.
No, but I'll add that in now.
All right.
Hell I'll make a little American Psycho reference.
All
right.
Hell yeah, you will. Well, you can catch all things Eric Comedy at ericcomedy.com. I'm going to be at the second Saturday Shit Show on the third Saturday of the month, this month. If you're listening to it, it's this Saturday night. Guys, come on out to the Auto Bar. I'm filming some shit. Could really use your support. You can also check me out at the DC Improv with Die Laughing Productions on the 20th and on December 22nd at Magoobie's Joke House. All that info at Eric Comedy or DieLaughingProductions.com. All things Jeremy Comedy right here on this podcast. Jeremy, take us out of here.
Right. Coming to the end. All right.
Hey, what, did you divorce her or something? Come on, tell me more!
You know it's Christmas everywhere you look. Yuletide carols, cheers in every nook. And still I walk through people forgetting about our Lord. Jesus died for our sins, and now you'll feel the sword. Because it's Christmas, and the Germans are here to steal all our Christmas bonuses, so stick it in their ear.
Stick it in their ear now.
Yes, it's Christmas, we all proudly say. Jesus would have wanted me to blow your ass away. I can't believe they would hit us on this night. Germans think they got us, but you know they ain't Reich.
They ain't Reich now.
It was just a party, cheer and filled with glee. Now John McClane's gonna turn your corpse into a Christmas tree. Because it's Christmas, Jesus Christ is born. Throwing Nazis off the roof and sounding all the horns.
Sound them horns now.
Yes, it's Christmas, we sing in regard. Stick it up your German ass, it's time to die hard. Yippee-ki-yay, motherfuckers.